Okay, thanks a lot. So just to say that actually the research that we've launched together with the WASH cluster is actually about the gender gap. So it's about the difference between men and women's opportunities and access to resources and outcomes within society. So what gender gaps can actually be in many different different sectors. So for example, in education, we can see in South Sudan that there's a gap between men and women's level of education. And also working with the WASH cluster, with the water sanitation and hygiene promotion activities, we also noticed that in our programming, there was a gender gap between the opportunities and skills that men and women have and ability to contribute to improving public health in the country.
Yes, and why? Well, you didn't mention already about, maybe education and all that, but why is there that so much gap? Is it also with attitude of, you know, how people employ men and women and all that, or the qualification? Why is there this gender gap?
Thanks. Maybe I can answer, and Olivia, please join. I mean, there is a gap in qualifications, but as I mentioned earlier, part of that is also related to opportunities and expectations of what men and women can and can't do. So, for example, in the research that that IOM worked on alongside the WASH cluster, the gender-based violence subcluster, and RedR UK, we noticed that that basically it's also around attitudes. So, for example, there's stereotypes related to what men should and shouldn't be doing and what women should and shouldn't be doing. So, for example, with men, most predominantly in the research, it was shown that there was an expectation they should be in leadership roles, they should be doing engineering or what we might call hardware jobs, and that for women, they're most suited to being in the office and maybe doing hygiene promotion and unpaid work, especially in the communities, looking after water points, making sure that public health is upheld in the homes and things like this.
Yes, Olivia, you'd like to add something on that?
I'd love to add a little bit. I mean, this is an issue that's not just in South Sudan. It's across the world as well. Traditionally, the WASH sector has been quite a male-dominant sector because of these constructs of gender ideas and gender norms. And even if we see today with my daily interactions as part of the WASH cluster, we engage with the national and international partners throughout the country. And I notice myself, I'm constantly referred to as sir in emails because people just assume that the person they're communicating with is a man. And so small things like that you see pop up day in, day in and out when you... So it's quite interesting.
All right. And now this report is looking at closing the gender gap in water sanitation and hygiene. Now, let's look at the barriers here. What are some of the challenges that, you know, the women face every day in the work, in their WASH work? What kind of barriers do you go through?
So barriers that women can go through in the work even before they get the job, even if a woman is qualified and capable and ready to take the job, could be that people just don't think it's appropriate for a woman to be going into the field, into the more remote areas to be working on water and sanitation, to be doing these hard labour jobs that Catherine mentioned. Could also be the barriers that are actually physically there, you know, threats of violence for a woman to go into these remote places without the adequate protection, barriers in terms of having children and being the predominant caregiver for a child and trying to balance having children at home or looking after small other members of the family as well as going to the office and as well as carrying out work.
Yes, and this particular report also gives some recommendations on how actually these barriers can be addressed. Can you give us some, Catherine?
Sure, yeah. I just wanted to talk a bit more about the research and how we worked on it together. So, in fact, the way we designed it was that we did some surveys with water sanitation and hygiene practitioners from different organizations working in South Sudan. We also did various focus group discussions, or what we call participatory discussions, using photos of men, women, boys, girls, and people with disabilities, both men and women, mm-hmm. and tried to, well, boys and girls more like young men and women, so looking at age, gender, and disability differences, and tried to get people to rank who they think is most suitable for the job, mm-hmm. and also what they think those barriers are. So the community in particular felt that, as Olivia mentioned, that risks of gender-based violence were very, very high, mm-hmm. and they were actually among women the top issue about why they couldn't get into the workforce, or they wouldn't be able to maintain a job, because they felt that either their husbands or wider family may have problems with them bringing home pay, or consider that maybe they're out and being unfaithful. That's often a very common thing that was mentioned. Mm-hmm. So those risks are high, and then also to get jobs, there's high risks of sexual exploitation and abuse, especially if the recruitment process isn't transparent. So those were coming up very high. Then alongside issues of childcare and household work, especially is for working women that may be in the office, but also for community level committees and volunteers, because in fact women have a very, very high workload, so then it makes it challenging for them to have any other time to spend on other activities, let alone learn a new skill. So these kind of things are very much a big challenge, along with our organisational pregnancy, maternity leave policies, mm-hmm. breastfeeding spaces and this type of thing, and generally understanding that there's differences, and we actually do need women in our teams in mm-hmm. order to deliver and create the kind of changes in public health that we expect in society, as well as to not reinforce and leave women and girls behind in South Sudan. So in terms of what can be done, there's been a lot of work that this research has actually uncovered, and lots of different organisations are doing work on this, so it's not a lost hope. And I think the research and the programme guide that's been developed alongside it has been a product of actually a couple of years of working with the WASH cluster and the GBV subcluster, and understanding what can work in the context. So mm-hmm. maybe Olivia, do you want to give some?
Yes, Olivia.
Yeah, I mean, one of the examples we could say, over the past 2 years now, the WASH cluster, as part of our strategic goals, we have made a key goal that women and girls should be interviewed to have a GBV safety audit mm-hmm. prior to a borehole construction or rehabilitation, or some kind of construction or rehabilitation. And these safety audits should be run both with women and girls, and run by female staff. Mm-hmm. So it's both addressing the need to speak to the people who will primarily be drawing the water or collecting the water, but also have female staff there so that they can engage and they can draw out the best of people. And this is another step that's taken to ensure that female staff actually are present on the team. Mm-hmm.
And talking to these women, or the villages where you go to, do the women, are they willing to come and work, or because of what has, you know, the attitude of the communities has actually impacted them, and they're looking at this as a man's job? Are they willing to come? Are they willing to participate? And the men willing to let that happen, or the community just don't understand why this is a problem?
I think thanks for that question. It's a very good one. I think in lots of communities, there's obviously a lot of diversity in South Sudan, but indeed it may in a lot of communities be quite a new issue. Most community meetings, women may come, they may sit at the back, they're not really expected to contribute. In some places, they're definitely not even expected to come to the community meeting. They may sit on the floor where the men sit on the seat and talk. So there's all these different kind of challenges to engaging women. But I think, like, we're working with communities in South Sudan, so mm-hmm. working with them means that we engage with them in a way which is like, this is what we want to achieve together. We look mm-hmm. at our common ground. We discuss why it's important to have women involved. Definitely there's resistance, but mm-hmm. in fact, what one of the main things that also the research found, but we found in practice, is that if you have female role models, and including also male role models that really very practically support women's participation, mm-hmm. then in fact people also start to see that there could be changes. I mean, for example, with our community hygiene promoters, lots of people think that this should also be, because it's paid work, it may be a man's job. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some women that I talked to, they had said, in fact, we saw women in your team were doing this, and they were also leading the discussions with the community, and they were doing this work. So then we realized we could also do it. And now I'm also a role model in my community, and other women also want to come and Great. Do this work.
Great. Let's start with that. You did mention that making people understand why it's important to get women involved. Let's start from there. Why is it important to get women involved?
Well, I mean, from a humanitarian and a humanity perspective, I mean, women and men, we live in this world together. We embrace this world together. We go through life together. Mm-hmm. And women have unique perspective, unique views, unique challenges, and are incredibly hardworking and incredibly dedicated. And I'm very happy to work with women, even as a woman. And I think mm-hmm. having the in a workplace environment as well, even if you take WASH out of the equation, it's important that we involve women and we have a diverse workplace. For WASH, it's important that we involve women because a lot of the struggles that people who are impacted by the lack of access to water you mentioned, mm-hmm. primarily these are women. So also having a woman's perspective inside the office gives you a chance to look at it from a different way and address the problem in a different way.
Right. Yes.
I mean, in my work with the water sanitation and hygiene promotion team at IOM, I did speak to lots of water management committee members, and I asked one man who's in a water management committee in one of the communities in Twitch the same question. Mm-hmm. And he said, actually, we will fail if we don't have women's ideas. So I need other men to listen and to understand that this is actually important. We need to be working together with women. And in that way, we're going to keep our water sources clean and maintained so that we can all access water in our communities.
Great. If you just join us, you're listening to the Miraya Breakfast Show, of course, where the big conversation begins every morning. My guest today from the WASH Cluster Information Management Office, and also we have from IOM, we are discussing on closing the gap in water sanitation and hygiene, which identifies barriers that women face to meaningfully participate in humanitarian programming. So yes, if you have any question, please don't hesitate to share your thought with us and call us. Our lines will be open 091206-2950 or 092190-2950, and you can talk to our guests here with us in the studio. But just before we take some other phone calls, Olivia, what are the commitments of the WASH cluster and others to address these particular issues? What are you doing?
I mean, I already mentioned it, is to ensure that we include it in our strategic objectives. So the WASH cluster works with WASH partners throughout the country, with partners who are looking at water sanitation and hygiene. And it's one of our objectives to inform and shape the way that partners implement their projects as well. So we ensure that we have strategic objectives and activities that are directed towards closing the gender gap, but also we for a different kind of funding programs, we specify that people should be implementing certain activities that close the gender gap. Also, there is the program guidance that IOM has put together that we also incorporate and utilize and share with our partners as well, so they also know on their level how they can close the gender gap.
All right. Just give us a picture of what exactly you do when it comes to this water sanitation and hygiene. How is the situation like in the whole of South Sudan, and where are you all involved in? So our listener can be able to ask specific questions on, beside closing the gender gap here, what exactly do you do?
So what exactly I do, I would say in my office, I am the queen of Excel. I am the data information management specialist. So I collect all the data from all the partners that are doing work in South Sudan, but I also try and analyze the data from other sources to see where there's problems. So as we know, and currently in South Sudan, we have a big problem with flooding. So we are doing analysis to find out where the biggest impacts of flooding are. And again, through flooding, you see that a lot of women are severely impacted.
Absolutely. Yes, so basically dealing with sanitation, water and all that, do you like build boreholes, construct boreholes to these villages? That's particularly what I wanted to know. Do you provide clean waters and what do you do, basically?
So me, I'm...
Not you as a person, but the whole, like the water.
Okay, yeah. Right. So as a whole, this is exactly what we do. If there are areas without access to water, if there's areas without access to hygiene, we work to ensure that there's water provision. If there is a borehole, but the borehole isn't working, then people will go in to repair the borehole. If in this time of COVID as well, one of the key things that we're doing is working with hygiene promoters and community volunteers, training them on the appropriate methods, you know, keeping a safe distance, washing your hands, not shaking hands anymore, all the key things, wearing a face mask when possible, and also distributing hand washing stations so that community members are able to wash their hands.
Great. And yes, talking to you, Catherine, why is IOM involved in this water and sanitation and working with WASS?
Okay, International Organization for Migration is a humanitarian organization, so we're working on addressing the humanitarian needs in the country, and we have been doing so since the formation of South Sudan. So that's why we're working on rehabilitation of boreholes, we're working on drilling new boreholes, we're also working on sanitation facilities in institutions like health facilities and education facilities, as well as encouraging community members to build their own latrines so that we stop the practice of open defecation. And we're also promoting hygiene, safe hygiene practices, including also related to COVID-19 prevention. One thing that's very, very clear working on that, though, is that we can't just have a team full of men determining what their issues are and their needs on the ground, because if we don't talk to women and girls, then we're not going to be addressing the humanitarian needs overall. And also, if we only engage men to make decisions in communities, then frequently we get issues like one could be that some practices are that we would only talk with local authorities and men in the community who are not primary users of water about where the water point should be drilled. And of course there's technical considerations about where the drilling should be, but if we're not including women in that discussion, then it might be in a location that's not suitable for them because it's too far, or it's a risky area to go and they don't feel safe to go there. So if we want to improve public health, we have to make sure that communities do feel safe to access that water point, because it's not a use building a facility that people in the community aren't going to feel safe to go to, and then they would also have additional protection risks in the same way. So this is what Olivia was mentioning when she talked about doing an audit of the safety and talking with women and girls about those issues.
Great. Well, it's time for us to talk to you now. Call us and talk to my guests here in the studio, and particularly we're looking at how we can close that gender gap between, of course, men and women when it comes to wash, or, you know, like in the humanitarian, and participating in the humanitarian programming and how that can be achieved. So if you have any question, any comment, please don't hesitate. Miraya, good morning. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Good morning. This is John from Rumbek.
John from Rumbek. John, it's good to have you. Please go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I would have a comment and a question at last. Looking at the women's empowerment in our country has a lot of challenges. Some of the challenges, are based in our culture. Some of the challenges are also with the actors themselves. Those who want to further, women empowerment. When we look at the shift, at first it was called WID, which is WID, Women in Development. Now, when the authors look at this, it looked as if women were integrated, you know, already made development, where they were not involved in decision-making process. Then again, they had to shift to what? Which is WAD, which is Women and Development. They look at it as if women were a different entity. Mm-hmm. Now, they shifted to GAT, which is Gender and Development, where all of us should participate equally, both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
In the context of South Sudan currently, women are treated as if they are different entity. Now you could see it, you know, from the point of view in the presentation. Men should also be involved to know that there is important of women empowerment,
mm-hmm.
so that they are engaged, they participate, and they understand women's perspectives. Basically, you know, in the issues. Let me give you my example. In 2016, I wedded after my wife graduated from the university.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2018, they sponsored her that they were impressed, you know, from her performance, and they want to continue the master's program after we wedded.
Mm-hmm.
So I was contacted as husband whether I will accept the decision. So I made the decision. My wife and I said, we made, you know, a risk analysis, because of course as a young family we need to be together.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, I had to agree, you know, for her to go for a master's program, because I did not say why my wife needs to be the first to go for a master's degree. Then she will look down at me as if she's more educated than me. So I allowed her to go for a master's program, contrary to what my, you know, my relative did not like, because they were against my decision that why did you allow your wife, you know, to go for a further study instead of you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, you know, it's good, you know. What she's going to will benefit both of us as a family.
Right.
Why is it wrong?
Great. Now let's come back to yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, you seem to be having a question.
Yes, I'm saying let's come back to this particular discussion of the gap that we've seen.
Yes. Yes. Now you know the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So the gap is that women in South Sudan are treated differently when issues of women empowerment are being discussed. It's just only the women that focus. Men are left out.
Okay.
It needs our contribution as well to understand their perspectives of having a decision-making process. They must be involved in political decision-making, in the policy design and implementation, and up to the project monitoring and evaluation. So from here, at least the gap will be closed. But look at the gender and development. Now, any position advertised, when you see gender and when you see a gender position, it looks as if it is a position for women.
Strictly,
but
all right.
People to take part to know they're important.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for talking to us this morning here. We do appreciate your time. And yes, John, I've spoken quite, like, really good speech there. Anybody like to comment on what John said, please?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and thank you, John. It was interesting to hear about your family and your decision to support your wife to go to university. So I commend you on that one. And I think more people can take the example of John and his family.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say in terms of having men's involvement in this issue is, of course, it's absolutely essential. And Olivia alluded to it earlier. Mm-hmm. We're working together. If we don't have women's voices in decision making at community level or even within our organizations, mm-hmm. then we're going to miss something major. In fact, we do have men making decisions and at the community and within our organization. That's actually the norm, and that's how our societies have been set up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also what the research confirms, that that women are left out and men are the main decision makers. But if you do ignore the main decision makers, change doesn't happen. So it definitely is important to engage men. That's why I gave the example of the Water Management Committee member from Twitch, but mm-hmm. he's not the only one. You do need men to support this, but it's not about them just allowing. At some point we're going to have to get to a situation where we understand that men and women do have equal rights. And even if you're married to a woman, can you imagine really an example where a woman would be the one that makes a decision for the husband. Of mm-hmm. course, that would be something just completely unheard of in most societies, in South Sudan, in even where I come from, the same. We would still find that a bit mm-hmm. amazing. But in fact, if we're to have equal rights, it means that we both are able to make the decision about whether we want to go out to work. And we mm-hmm. should also be protected within that workplace. It shouldn't be a luxury for us to not have to deal with sexual exploitation and abuse. Right. That should be what our organizations have put in place to make sure that both men and women are protected and are able to come and equally have an opportunity to work. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the playing field is not equal, and right. that's what this is trying to address.
Yes, and one of the concerns of John is that when we talk about gender, basically, like anything to do with gender, if it is positioned, advertised that involve gender, is you only find that it is about women and men are not involved. So it seems to allude in there, we're going to have the danger of having empowered women, but men who cannot handle empowered women, and that becomes more of conflict in a society.
Well, I think you're talking about power here. And it's like as if it's a finite resource, so that it means that men are very threatened by the fact that women would have opportunities to work. Well, in fact, of course, when we're talking about gender, we are normally talking about women, because unfortunately society has made it very unequal. We don't value women's contributions. We think they should only be limited to one thing. But it's the same for men. We also consider that they shouldn't be maybe so much involved in hygiene promotion. We would really just expect them to be engineers and to be program managers.
Soldiers
and things
and
like this. Yeah, in many different sectors. We have like an expectation about what is a woman. Woman's job and what's a man's job, and most of the time women's jobs are completely unpaid, and that's what you also see within the water sanitation and hygiene promotion. We expect a lot of women's contributions to make our community safe and promote public health, but when it comes to what's considered a man's job, we're going to pay money for it. Like, we're going to give you skills, we're going to train you as a pump mechanic and then ensure that you can go around and you're paid to rehabilitate boreholes. It's not so much the same when it comes to women's jobs, and you find that in every sector. So maybe there's a concern about and I'm sure that there is a concern about women coming into the workforce and taking men's jobs. These are not men's jobs, these are jobs that we all need to do to deliver services, to improve public health in our communities. And actually, we should be working together and valuing each other's contributions. But yes, the playing field is not set up equally when men are the ones who get to decide if they go for education and whether their wives can mm-hmm. go. Because in fact, that does mean that we rely on men to decide what's possible. In fact, we should set up a society to have opportunities for everyone according to what they would like to do, not according to their gender.
And if I get John very right, I do believe that what he said when it comes to like the issue of gender is men should be able to as well come out and talk about, you know, gender issues, just like, you know, advocating for women, not just being like, okay, women should be the one advocating for themselves and that's women's issue as such. That was why he's saying if it gets to any issue to talk with gender about gender, you find it's only women talking about it.
Well, I think it's interesting that John brought this up, because I mean, even we were chatting before we came on air about now we have two women here talking about women in water sanitation and hygiene and closing the gender gap. This is quite rare. I work in an office with two male colleagues, and they could have been the ones to come in today, but I was the one to come in. So having two women here talking about it is an anomaly for water sanitation and hygiene. On the reverse, like John said, maybe you get the idea that there's more women working in gender, but I know just from my engagements, for example, with the gender-based violence subcluster, I'm in communication with a male colleague a lot, and he also reflects on the importance of engaging men in the community, and sometimes it could also be through a man-to-man conversation so that they also have a space where they can speak freely about certain issues, but so that they are also sensitized and awareness is raised to the importance from women of women within society.
Great. Let's take another caller. Remember, you can talk to us. Our lines are still open, 0921-902950 or 0921-902079. Hello, Miraya. Good morning. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
From Murad George, Sibir William, Sabal Kaya.
Sabal Nur, Marhabeg Manud.
Bram Kwesi Dida, Sibir William. Len Marendo Hak Fukuli, I. Bulina Marna, Kwana, Kaman Umbagilo. One, and I should be an
and it's not very clear, but what I heard from you, Manud, is saying both women and men have equal rights, and you have seen women in WOW doing jobs that men do, and you know, vice versa. So he doesn't see any problem with this, according to Manud. But yes, it's quite unfortunate that your line was not very good. You can try to call us on the other line possibly and can be clear. Call us 091-206-2950 or 091-206-2079 and be live on the Miraya Breakfast Show and talk to our guests as we look at closing the gender gap in water sanitation and hygiene. Of course, identifying the barriers and seeing how actually women can meaningfully participate in humanitarian programming. So Katina Lisa Fimaharo, can I know come on us, I'll be Kativlena, Kativlena Firisala Tuale, Una Bainu. Yes, there is a question coming right here from Korn Deng Chok from WOW, and he's saying that we're seeing when it comes to payment or opportunity, say these days there's a lot of opportunities given to actually women than to men. That's why if you see in, you know, like job adverts, it's even said women are more encouraged to apply. What will you say? What, how will you respond to that?
Thank you. Yes, sure. The reason why the adverts say women are encouraged to apply is because, in fact, within our workforce, we don't really see very many women. And that's one of the barriers. I don't really think that just writing women are encouraged to apply really means that then these women are necessarily selected. Of course, you know, there's a process to follow for recruitment, and we require people with skills and qualifications. Often people say, oh, women are being selected, we shouldn't just select them even if they don't have the qualifications. That's not at all what we're trying to say. We need to have qualified women, but we also need to change the ground for which they're actually able to compete for these jobs. So we can't expect necessarily that they will have the same level of education. Like we just heard from John before, that many women aren't actually able to access university education. So if we expect to see them within our offices and leading teams in the field, then we may need to expect an equivalent level of education. It's not that they can't do the job, it's just that we need to address our ideas of what we actually need. Of course, if we're talking about engineers, this is important. We need to have studied specific things, but also it's not that we just come out of university and we know how to rehabilitate a borehole or do drilling. Of course, there's practical skills and knowledge that are required, and often men have social networks that allow them to take more advantage of opportunities to get access to this kind of employment, which enables them to continue within their profession. So it's also about that. In this research, we talked to university students as well, both in South Sudan and also South Sudanese in Uganda, and we asked them what their barriers were, and it was also around perceptions of what might be expected from their families. It was about home work-life balance, it was about whether or not their husbands might allow them to continue within the profession. It was having the time to spend on applications and things like this. So there's lots of challenges. This is also identified within the report, but there's also ways that we can start engaging university students, but also people without degrees who have skills that they've developed over a long period of time that are very much needed to improve the water sanitation and hygiene situation in South Sudan. And that's for both men and women, but we really must recognize that our workforce is predominantly men at the moment.
All right. Now, as you did mention, your workforce is predominantly men. Now, we have been discussing about, closing this gender gap. Before we just close in less than 4 minutes here now, what will be your final recommendations or the recommendations that from the report, and how can it be applied to actually work in South Sudan where we can close this gap?
Okay, thank you. I think we've given a lot of them, to be honest, but it's going to require effort, and including specifically our callers have mentioned it, we're going to require effort of men. Mm-hmm. But we also need our organisations to take specific action to address it, because it's not going away by just writing on a job advert. Women are encouraged to apply. Mm-hmm. So we need to be doing outreach to universities. We also need to do this outreach at community level to engage women and really encourage them to be taking up opportunities that are offered to them, maybe as pump mechanics or to be in water management committees. We really need to start recognizing that we need to redress the safety issues and issues around maternity leave and breastfeeding and childcare responsibilities that are much more expected of women and are affecting their ability to participate within the workforce. And also we need to start changing our attitudes, and that also means engaging men, engaging women as well, to understand, yes, you can contribute as well, because there's a lack of confidence among many women when they haven't had much opportunity that, or they've been told that it's not really for them to do so. And we also need to see women in the workforce. So we had one caller, we didn't unfortunately hear much of what he had to say, but from WOW he did say he's seen men and women doing things. So we have women engineers in WOWs, which is maybe where he's seen them, constructing latrines for schools. So it's we have to see the change, but then we actually have to start saying, okay, we need to address it specifically. It's not just an issue that's going away by small tokenistic things.
Great. Olivia, something to add? Your final remarks, please?
I mean, maybe my final remarks would be for people who are at home and listening and thinking, okay, well, this is interesting, but it's not so relevant for me. Maybe I'm a teacher. Maybe I work in the market. This is interesting, but not relevant. But this is for everyone as well. For your conversations you're having over a cup of tea, over a cup of chai, and someone says, oh, you know, I saw this woman doing this, and you can, you know, change the subject, change the way we talk, change the way we look at things. Maybe you have a niece, a daughter, a cousin, someone who's looking into studying something and they're not sure what they would study. You could say, well, have you thought about this? On the radio this morning, I heard that in water sanitation and hygiene, they're also looking to incorporate more women into their programming. You know, plant the seeds of change in all assets of our community. If you do work in an organization, then you could talk to your HR and say, oh, I heard on the radio this morning that one of the barriers is where women can breastfeed. What are our policies for breastfeeding? If you are working up in upper management, you could also look over this as well. In all sectors, really, but the first change, it also comes within us and how we interact and how we engage in the community.
Great. Thank you so much, Olivia. Thank you, Catherine, for coming to Mirai Studios. We really do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.